When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress Manicure and Press-On Falsies.
Hello and welcome to another episode of That's What People Do. My name is James and I'm joined, as always, by Ryan. How are you, Ryan?
Oh my God, is that a TikTok influencer I'm speaking to? Hi.
Yep, we are booming. I say booming. We're booming over there.
Yeah, we're killing it. Hi.
Yeah, with the faceless content. People didn't want to see my face. The second I stopped putting it on TikTok, we're doing well.
Yeah. I got a face for podcasting, dude.
Yeah, that's it. That was a bit of a kick in the teeth, but you've got to take success wherever you can get it. I don't know what to say after that. That's really derailed me. You might have noticed that if you listened to the last episode, Jenna's not with us for this one.
Nope.
That was a one-time thing. So if you're thinking, oh, Jenna, that's interesting, we'll see how she goes. She's gone now. So Jenna, you got your Jenna fill.
Jenna will appear every now and then. I think, as we mentioned last episode, Jenna's our official videographer / manager to keeping us boys in check and making sure that we're accountable for some stuff because we're terrible, mm-hmm. We know. Jenna films with us and she sees us at probably our worst, and we definitely have seen Jenna at her worst when she got numb when we filmed. I'm allowed to say that because she's not here and she won't listen to this. We want to get her on to talk more about sort of, you know, filming that we do and how the process works, and you know, just have that feminine touch.
There you go, well said. I don't really have anything else to add, to be fair. I think this episode kind of carries on from the last episode, speaking of hybristophilia, commonly known as Bonnie and Clyde syndrome. And I said specifically in that episode that this one will be about Bonnie and Clyde, so here we are. It would have been, I was tempted to not do it just to really throw a curveball, but I'm doing it.
Can imagine the outcry.
I remember ages ago putting something on Facebook. It was an image of Bonnie and Clyde with a little fact next to it or something, and someone commented being like, please do an episode on this. I can't remember who it was. I didn't try and find it, but if that was you, I remember that you commented that, and here we are, and I hope you still listen because this one's for you.
I mean, to be fair, we get a lot of recommendations for episodes now, which is fantastic, but bear with us because, fuck me, we've got a list to get through. Like, in my iPhone, in my notes, it's wild. I can just scroll for probably days. Like, it's just long.
Wow, he's scrolling. Well, I can see him scrolling. There's a lot of scrolling.
So there's a lot to come through, but if you join us on Patreon, amongst some other things, you do get rights to vote for who we talk about. So in a way to try and narrow it down, we will put up a poll on Patreon and you can vote who we spoke about, which is why we recently spoke about Issei Sagawa. That was a voter suggestion and you guys vote for it. So head over there.
That was a good episode. Well done, voters. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, well done.
So without much further ado, let's stop rambling and get on with it. Bonnie and Clyde have been immortalised by the films and stage shows loosely based on their lives. It seems odd that these criminals are almost celebrated, but it's presumably the love story that goes along with it that makes them endearing to wider audiences. One thing is for certain, the true story of Bonnie and Clyde, whilst having romantic elements, is a story of two criminals who met a grisly end. One aspect of their story that intrigues people, and by people I mean me, is how do two people fall in love and find out about their mutual love of crime. We've seen it in our Fred and Rose West episode, where two monsters get together and just commit horrific acts. I don't know how you would sort of start that conversation with your partner. We mentioned it briefly in the last episode. Like, if I turned around to any of my former partners and asked them to go on a murdering spree with me, I would assume that they would break up with me. Or not, I've never actually asked them. But you would
You'd
assume.
You'd hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it would be like, I suppose it would kind of go like, you've got a partner that maybe is, I don't know, they're exerting some like uncomfortable, probably unhealthy ideas or suggestions floating them around, or they talk in a particular way that is a bit like, you can't tell if they're joking or not. But then you start to realize that your partner like is reciprocating some of those, and then maybe one night you're just getting drunk and you're like, can you imagine like how we could just murder someone and we'd get away with it, wouldn't we? And they'd be like, oh yeah. And then you just role play it, and then you're like, when you're sober, you go, what you said last night, do you
still
would
real
you, would you is it still real or
I think it works for other things as well, like perhaps things you like in the bedroom. Like, I don't know how you'd start the conversation. If you like being urinated on, for example, which some people do, I'm not judging. How does one ask about that without repulsing your partner?
Yeah. I don't know. How would you
really, I need the answer to that. How do I ask my partner to piss on me? I'm joking.
Again, I think it's one of those, you throw it in as a joke when, like, you know, when you're a couple and you shower together.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I need a wee. You know, don't move. And then you, like, ease it in. So you have a wee at the other end of the shower, straight down the plug hole. And your other half then gets comfortable watching you do that. And maybe you would, I don't know, build up.
Whole thing where couples do piss together, like the in a heterosexual couple, the woman would sit down and just be pissing normally, and then the man sort of aims through her legs, which for me would be horrendous, because the first like second or two of pissing, I don't know where it's going. It's going anywhere.
You've got to like, you sort your ranges out, ain't you? Like,
yeah.
You've got to adjust for wind direction and everything and make sure that's going where it needs to go.
It's bad. Some days it's like a sprinkler. It's horrible.
Yeah, no, I think most of these, almost all of these, I think the general consensus answer is going to be you start off small, it's baby steps and you build up, right?
Yeah, I think that is what we see here, although Bonnie did know what she was getting involved with. So it makes it easier, doesn't it?
Because she has hebristophilia.
Exactly. So if you are interested in this phenomenon where people fall in love with criminals, just go back, listen to our previous episode, super easy. You don't even have to swipe it, it'll just be the one underneath this. And it is also dubbed the Bonnie and Clyde syndrome, hence the episode today. But anyway, you've had enough ads, probably, us rambling in this pointless intro, so let's get into it. Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow were a notorious American criminal couple who gained fame during the Great Depression era. They were involved in a string of robberies, burglaries, and shootouts across the central United States from 1932 to 1934. Quite a small time period. Bonnie Elizabeth Parker was born on October 1st, 1910, in Rowena, Texas. I think I pronounced that right. And Clyde Chestnut Barrow, which I think is just a really charming name, was born on March 24th, 1909, in Tellico, Texas. So we've got two Texans. And as to an Englishman, we all know that Texans and guns go hand in hand, don't they?
That one star state, or no, Lone Star. Lone yeah. Star State.
It's that Family Guy sketch where if you buy a bottle of Jack Daniels, you get a free gun. When he was a young man, Clyde wanted to be a musician. Born into a poor farming family, they eventually moved to Dallas, where he carried on playing both the guitar and saxophone, something he continued until his death. In fact, fun little factoid for you. I'm sure we all know how this ends, so I'm going to spoil it. In the car, where they met their end, there was a saxophone, which presumably was Clyde's.
Oh, because he's, you know, when they're not criming.
Yeah, they're not criming all the time. They have some downtime.
And he's like, hey, Bonnie, listen to this.
Every woman loves a woodwind instrument, doesn't it?
Wait, what's... No, saxophone. That's what Lisa plays in Simpsons, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the big brass...
Oh, it's a brass instrument, not woodwind. Yeah, of course. I don't know my instruments. I don't know my instruments.
You said wooden. I was thinking clarinet. That's metal as well, isn't it?
That's wood. No, it's clarinet's woodwind, isn't it? I don't know.
We've
got people screaming at their phones right now. This is not a music podcast, as you've just found out. Clyde had aspirations to join the Navy, which presumably would have altered the course of history and all of the crime would have been avoided. But sadly for him, he was rejected on medical grounds. I think he had something when he was younger, maybe scarlet fever or something like that, which had a knock-on effect. And they were just like, we can't take you, bro. Clyde's older brother, Buck, was one of those guys that you just know would go on to get up to no good. Every school had them. I'm sure you're all thinking of someone now that you just knew from an early age, like you're going to grow up and be an absolute knobhead. This was Clyde's older brother. He dropped out of school, and by the time he was a teenager, was committing crimes. And as many older brothers do, he had an influence on his younger sibling. Clyde started off with petty crimes, but by the time he was an adult, this progressed to things like armed robbery. Now let's move on to Bonnie. Bonnie's upbringing, she too was born into a poor family, and following the passing of her father, they relocated to Dallas. Bonnie, like Clyde, had many aspirations when she was younger. She was a keen writer and would often write poetry, and wanted to see her name up in lights in Hollywood. Bonnie's first love wasn't Clyde. In fact, she first married Roy Thornton, her high school sweetheart. Sadly, Roy was a dickhead and abused Bonnie, and she got herself out of that situation, though they never actually divorced, and when she died later on, she's still wearing her wedding ring.
Oh, really?
Yeah, weird.
If you heard it, I sniggered when James said that he was a dickhead and abusive, and I'm laughing at the fact that she was in an abusive relationship. I'm laughing at the fact that she's like, it's a Bristophilia, we know that, and it's not a surprise that her first love was an arsehole.
Yeah, in my next paragraph says exactly that. Given that Roy was a criminal, she'd go on and fall in love with Clyde, it's now obviously believed that she had Hebristophilia.
Yeah.
She's probably not the first in history, but I think she's the most notable one that came first, which is why Bonnie and Clyde syndrome sort of comes out of it.
Yeah, I think if they weren't as famous, then it probably may not have come around. Or later on, like it would have been Fred and Rose West, and they'll go, why is it that Rose is a dickhead?
Yeah. But that's the interesting thing, I think, about Bonnie and Clyde. It's not their crimes or what they got up to, it's why they're famous. Because in the grand scheme of things, like in the grand history of America, they're very insignificant. But we'll get on to that.
Okay.
The pair first crossed paths in 1930, presumably introduced to each other by a mutual friend. They instantly fell in love and spent weeks being inseparable. Sadly for them, Clyde was a wanted criminal and arrested and placed in Eastern Prison Farm. Bonnie, until this point, had never committed a crime, but this was about to change and she showed the lengths she would go to for her new love. Clyde's sentence wasn't even that long, but he asked Bonnie to smuggle him in a gun so he could break out. Without questioning it, she did exactly this and Clyde was able to break out of prison. This, however, was a bit of a dumb move, which, I'm not going to lie, throughout this story, there are a lot of like instances where Clyde just is a fucking idiot, because he was eventually recaptured and given a longer prison sentence of 14 years.
Yeah, that'll do it. If you're going to break out, you got to break out and stay out.
Like, get gone. So if you've got a short sentence, just serve it. Just serve it and walk out the door.
Yeah, serve it. I've also heard this rumour, and I think it may just be that. I don't know how true it is, but that there's a thing in American law that everyone has the right to be free.
I've heard this before. You have a right to try and escape. Like, it's not a crime to try and escape.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that used to be a thing. I think if I'm remembering right, that used to be a thing. You couldn't be,
I don't
like,
know why I'm attributing that to Germany as well. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like I've heard that in Germany.
I don't know. I hope that's true, because I think that's really cool. Like, you know, you've the right to try and break out of prison. You've got the right to be free no matter what. I don't know if I agree with it now in today's world, but like, we as a state decide to take away your freedom, but you as a human being have the right to try and gain it back. So if you escape, great, but know that we will try and capture you again. I quite like that cat and mouse feel. I think that may be an old thing that by this point
probably
stopped.
Because then he does get slapped with a longer sentence because he escaped.
Yeah, because maybe too many people escaped. You know, it's Texas, isn't it? So, you know, Wild Western people breaking out prisons.
Yeah, it's just every day, isn't it?
Yeah.
This stint in prison would change Clyde. While there, an inmate called Ed Crowder would repeatedly beat and rape him, which turns the most famous criminal from a petty thief to a stone-cold killer. Clyde eventually stood up to Crowder. He lured him into the bathroom of the prison one night and committed his first ever murder by beating his rapist to death with a lead pipe. And I don't think anyone can really blame him for that one. Like,
no. No, that's a justifiable one. There's no need for that. Do you know what, actually? It's on my list, that long list. A guy called Carl Panzram. Who is like supposed to be like one of the meanest, hardest men in the world in history. And he does not have a good time in, like, as a young man in prisons and stuff like that, just being abused by older other men, which just turns him into this like stone cold bloke.
Yeah. I think there's a lot to be said with prisons. This is the thing. This is why I don't think it works in a lot of countries, because if you just put criminals together in a room, they're just going to do more criminal stuff and just plan more criminal stuff for the outside. It just doesn't really make sense to me. Whereas if you look at prisons in Scandinavia, Sweden, for example, they treat them like human beings. They're given an apartment. The guards will go and have a cup of tea with them. And their rehabilitation rate of people that actually re-offend is so low. Whereas in like America, UK, other countries where we just lock them up, throw away the key and then let them out eventually, they're going to re-offend.
I think what's really interesting is maybe we need to recategorize criminals and where and how we punish and deal with their crimes. So things like petty criminals, so like robbers, fraudsters, you know, people that do stuff like that. Those people could probably be rehabilitated. Maybe they could get more of an education, and by that extension, they can then, you know, go off and get a degree, get a job, and
yeah,
we can,
because
you'd
assume
them.
There's a reason why they're robbing. They need the money for something.
You would assume, and I am generalizing here, but then you would separate them from people that are murderers, sexual offenders, people like that who do grave harm to human beings. They get put in a separate place, because I do think that our criminal justice system should be based on what's the word I'm looking for? Like reforming the person.
Yeah, but that's exactly what it should be.
But when it comes to like murderers and sexual offenders and stuff like that, that one's a tricky one. And
you
just want to
put them in a hole and forget about them.
You do want to put them in a hole, but then at the same time, I have this thing where I feel like you should be able to rehabilitate, but I also don't want to deal with you myself, so I'm kind of happy to put you in a hole for the meantime.
It is difficult, isn't it? But I know what you mean. Like, people that have committed a few robberies shouldn't be in the same place as someone that's in there for sexual offence charges or whatever.
No.
Or even someone that's committed a few robberies and then is suddenly face to face with like a drug kingpin who just knows that they can like make this person do whatever they want. It's wrong. It shouldn't happen.
Yeah, I feel like that is probably the most common thing in prisons at the moment. It will be lower rung offenders going into a prison that's got a high rung offender who's then bossing, who's got a gang, who's leading a gang, who's leading some sort of thing, and then you're drawn into it and you then have to commit crimes to get on in the prison.
Yeah.
And by extension, you become a worse person.
Yeah, there's a big old problem there. But yeah, you would assume that a murder would add time to Clyde's sentence, right? Well, no, he was given no extra time. Unconfirmed reports claim that another inmate who was already serving a life sentence just took the blame for it.
Oh, really?
Because, like, what are they going to do? Lock him up longer? He's in there. Because in America, life is life. Over here, it's sort of, what, 30-odd years?
25 to 30 or something. But you can get life without parole.
Yeah, I think that must have been what this guy was having. And yeah, in the, here too.
In the UK, if you get life, it's inferred you'll get parole after 25 years.
Mm.
So it can you can make parole and then they go no, and you're still in.
Yeah. Yeah.
I quite like that. That's quite
Lucy
funny.
Letby got, wasn't it?
Lucy. Oh, right, yeah.
The nurse that killed all the babies, I think she will never see the light of day again.
Angels are dead, but yeah, man.
But yeah, this guy must have been Clyde's friend. He was like, yeah, I'll take the blame for it. What are they going to do? This prison was a shit hole and subjected the inmates to hard labour, which Clyde didn't want to do. So what he did, he went up to another prisoner, gave him an axe and said, can you cut two of my toes off, please? I don't want to do this hard labour anymore and this will get me out of it. And the guy did, just cut off two of Clyde's toes.
Whoa.
This is dumb move number two. Because all he had to do was stick it out a little bit longer because his mother was on the outside petitioning the governor to release him. And the governor eventually went, yeah, okay. Clyde was released 6 days after his toes were cut off.
Yeah, yeah, that'll do
it. He's so impatient. He just keeps doing, like, awful things. Oh, knobbed.
That is quite funny. Imagine that. He's sitting there with a bandage on his foot. He can't walk because his foot's so sore. And then the governor comes in and is like, right, Clyde, you're out. What? Why?
Your mum sorted it.
You can walk out. Out you go. I can't walk anywhere, boss.
Yeah, more. I don't know which toes it was, but it didn't really affect. He does a lot of running later in life, so I think he was okay.
It's going to be his little foot, little pinkies, isn't it?
No, you'd assume so. We're now in 1932, the year when Bonnie and Clyde began their infamous crime spree. Once released, the infamous Barrow Gang was set up, including Bonnie and Clyde and two men that Clyde had met in prison, Raymond Hamilton and Ralph Faults. Interesting fact about Faults, he later managed to turn his life around and lived until 1993.
Wow. Yeah. Wait, when's Bonnie and Clyde?
Early 30s.
Holy
They're
shit.
Very young at this point. They're young.
I mean, even still. That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Most, but we'll get onto it in a bit. There's a member of the gang as well. It was like 16 at one point. It's crazy. This version of the Barrow Gang only lasted around a year, but in that time, they went on a bit of a crime spree, which mainly targeted grocery stores, gas stations, and small banks. And I'm going to use this little break just to discuss some of the well-known myths surrounding Bonnie and Clyde and sort of say what actually happened. So this doesn't really fit chronologically, but I didn't know where else to put it, so it's going here. In terms of the crimes they committed, Bonnie and Clyde are in no way the most notable. In fact, I think there's a really fair argument that if they were judged purely on their crimes, no one would give a shit about them and their names would have been forgotten. The reason why they're famous is that in 1933, a shootout took place at the Barrow Gang's hideout in Joplin. They all managed to get away, but the police found a camera that they left behind, and the pictures on this camera are the famous ones that we all associate with Bonnie and Clyde, so the one where he's holding her, the one by the car, the one where Bonnie's got like a cigar and is holding a gun. Those pictures were on the camera. They were most likely taken just as a bit of fun, but the media had an absolute field day with them and published them everywhere because it was odd to see criminals looking so casual about what they were doing, and also a woman holding a gun and taking part was just really bizarre to people. So this is the reason why they're famous, not because of really what they did, but because of those pictures.
Mm.
And they're cool pictures.
They're the OG influencers of crimes.
Yeah, literally. If they had Instagram, they would have fucking loved it.
That's what it is, isn't it? It's just they just got big on Instagram.
Yeah. This leads me to my next myth, that Bonnie was the brains behind the crime while Clyde was the muscle. Years after their death, Faults would reveal that Bonnie was just madly in love with Clyde and would do anything that he wanted her to do. She was completely subservient to him and probably had very little to do with the movements of the gang. She only ever did what she was told. If you've ever seen the film with her like with a gun, like it just didn't happen.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I have heard that she never killed anyone.
No, she was literally there because she loved Clyde. That's it.
Yeah, that's so funny. Imagine the fight she'd put up if someone was to be like, your husband's an arsehole. And she'd be like, you shut the fuck up.
Yeah, hebristophilia. Their exploits were romanticised by the press and public, who often portrayed them as modern-day Robin Hoods. This is despite the fact that they frequently victimised ordinary citizens during their robberies. So I don't really know where. I think it's because during the Great Depression, everyone sort of, no one really had a pot to piss in, and everyone wanted to see the man sticking it to, or the everyday person sticking it to the man. And they thought Bonnie and Clyde were doing this, when in reality, they were just taking money from everyday hardworking people.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I'm going to assume they robbed banks as well, right?
So they didn't rob as many banks as people think. They're meant to be great bank robbers, but the banks they targeted were like really small town, low-key ones. They mainly did like stores, gas stations, things like that.
So do you think, because here's my thinking as maybe what's happened, is they've robbed a bank. It's got, and I don't think newspapers give a shit if you're robbing, Trevor up the road, but they care if you're robbing a bank. And I reckon the newspapers put it out going, oh, bank robbers in so-and-so, Texas or whatever. And everyone's gone, oh, yeah, we're all suffering. They've gone and robbed a bank that's stuck it to the man. And they just don't actually know what. Yeah,
and they've got the pictures to go with it.
Yeah, yeah. I could see this. I could fall for that.
Yeah, it's a pretty romantic story. You can see why people fell for it. But unfortunately, they were just petty criminals, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the story. As I mentioned, the first version of the Barrow Gang didn't last long, as a robbery gone wrong in 1932 meant that Bonnie and Foltz were arrested while Clyde and Hamilton escaped. Foltz got 10 years, whereas Bonnie had a clean record, so was released later that year. This is when the gang started becoming more notable, as they would engage in shootouts, leaving people dead. They would kill Deputy Sheriff Eugene Moore when all he wanted to do was arrest them for having an open bottle of whiskey in their car. Hamilton, later down the line in 1935, would be executed for murder when he was 20 years old.
Oof.
Yeah, it's how young these people were. And also how quickly executions happen, because nowadays people are on death row for fucking ages.
Yeah, yeah. Only because now they're terrified that evidence will come up to say they're actually innocent. But back then, there was nothing to prove otherwise, so you might as well just get it done.
Exactly. I love that. Is it still that every execution chamber has the phone on the wall so they can quickly get a phone call last second and be like, stop, something's come up.
Oh, that's clever. That's smart. Yeah.
They've recently trialled new execution methods as well. I remember writing about it. I think it's asphyxiation or nitrous. I don't know. It's a chemical, or they suffocate you with a mask. And it was supposed to be like really painless and stuff. I don't know why I'm laughing, but the first guy they used it on, they said he was writhing around on the bench for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah, I think I read an article on it. It might have been your article, but no, I read it. It was like, you know, supposed to be painless and humane. And then the guy that they got it was just, it was awful.
Yeah, he was not having a good time. But they've said that they're going to do it for more people, so yikes.
Trial by error.
Yeah, it's just fucking grim, isn't it? I don't think there's any right way to kill someone.
Have you heard, if there's enough in it, maybe we'll do an episode on it, about there's a guy who... he went to his execution, was pronounced dead by the doctor, but then he woke up.
I think I've heard this. And then he argued that he's served his life sentence or whatever because he died.
Yeah, officially he was dead. A doctor certified him as being dead. And he was like, well, I've served my life sentence. My execution happened and I'm fine.
Surely I get to go out. And I think he's got a good argument.
Yeah, and they said no. So I don't know if he's dead yet or not.
No, I don't know the name, but I've heard the story. Despite Clyde showing he had no qualms murdering whoever he needed to, Bonnie was still obsessed with him. And when she was released from prison, she continued her life of crime.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
William Daniel Jones joined the Barrow Gang in 1932 when he was 16. And then in 1933, Clyde's older brother Buck joined the gang, bringing along his wife Blanche Barrow. Or Blanche, as she was probably pronounced.
Blanche.
In 1933, the criminal couple got into a car accident where acid spewed over Bonnie's leg. They couldn't go to a doctor because they were wanted criminals, so sort of improvised their own medical treatment using baking soda and other things. And Bonnie was left permanently scarred and often had to be carried places because walking was too painful.
Do you know what? I'm vaguely aware of that one. And apparently it was battery acid from the car. And it
I think
burned
he,
down
he
to
took
her
a wrong
bone.
Turn. Yeah, it was horrible. He took a wrong turn, Clyde did, and they crashed. And she came out of it not good.
Imagine that burning down to your bone. Like, you're not walking again properly.
No. Which is,
baking
in a life
powder.
Of crime, is really difficult.
Put
I think it was like baking powder.
Powder.
I think there was some salts involved as well. It just... But they couldn't go to a doctor because they'd be arrested, which... Don't do the
which
crime.
Which probably... Do you know what? I'm sorry. That goes to show how much of an arsehole that Clyde actually is, because, like, Bonnie could sit here and just die and he's like, fine. We're not going to a hospital. No, I'm not getting pulled in. Whereas, surely for most people, they'd go, more to the point, send her on her own. Get someone to drop her off.
Because she's been... I think at this point, they're wanted. So they do know who they are.
But they're not going to catch him. If they're already on the run anyway, they're not going to get him anytime soon. Unless she knows loads of info on safe houses that they use or something. But at least send her to the fucking hospital on her own. Because she could sit there and just die and he's just doing good shit.
Yeah. It was pretty grim, but she got through it, but obviously could never... I think she could stand, but she could never run away.
Yeah. Do we actually know? Like, because we know that she's got her Bristol Villa, so she's absolutely obsessed with this guy, and the more crimes he does, the more attracted she is. Do we actually know if he was, like, into her in that way?
I think he was. I think they loved each other.
See, I don't know. I reckon he could just take or leave her. I think he just knew what she was. I think it's like the Joker and Harley Quinn. Yeah. I don't think he's that obsessed with her at all. I think he's just, while she's there, she's useful, she's a body, and she'll do whatever he says.
Yeah, but then after this, where she becomes a burden, and there's a point later on where it's just them two left, he sticks with her when he could have abandoned her.
Okay, all right, we'll see how it goes then.
Fast forward to the events during the shootout in Joplin, where two police officers were killed and the gang's pictures were taken from their camera, life got a whole lot harder. Given that their faces were now plastered across the country and everyone was obsessed with Bonnie and Clyde, they couldn't exactly walk down the street without being recognised. And what didn't help is that they drove a stolen car across state lines, meaning the FBI were now on their tail. Given that police were more aware of them, this resulted in a lot more shootouts and a lot more dead police officers. A shootout took place at the Red Crown Tourist Court in Missouri, where Buck was shot and gravely injured. Then another shootout took place a few days later in Iowa, where Buck, the poor bastard, was shot again. He and Blanche were captured. Blanche was sentenced to 10 years in prison, and Buck died a few days later. RIP, Buck.
RIP.
Blanche eventually sorted her life out, remarried, and lived a normal life until she passed away in 1988.
That's good innings.
Yeah, they've done well here. There's a story coming which is so funny. A guy that lives past Bonnie and Clyde, and I shouldn't say it's funny, it's horrible, but it's ironic. We'll get to it though. William Daniel Jones, still a minor, had a fascinating story. In fact, is this his story? Yeah, this is the story I just mentioned. Sorry. William Daniel Jones, still a minor, had a fascinating story. He soon realised that Bonnie and Clyde had absolutely no problem being killed in a shootout. In fact, it's almost like they wanted it. This revelation came when he and Bonnie were hiding in a bush, and when she was convinced that Clyde was dead, she became annoyed that she didn't have a weapon herself so that she could go down with him. Clyde was fine, but this was a turning point for Jones. He left the gang and returned home, and was arrested and sentenced to 15 years for what is now known as manslaughter. He was released after 6 years and generally had a quiet life. That was until the Bonnie and Clyde movie was released in 1967, and he realised that this was his way into the big time, and he gave interviews about his time with Bonnie and Clyde, most notably to Playboy magazine, of all places.
Hell yeah.
Despite the fact he left the gang because he wanted to avoid being killed in a rain of gunfire, he met his end in 1974 when an argument got out of hand and he was shot by a shotgun.
Hmm.
It's just quite ironic, I think.
Yeah, you've left the gang, so you don't get shot and you end up getting shot.
Years later, shotgun, I don't know, it might be to the head, to the chest, not sure, but shotguns make a mess.
You don't want to get shot with a shotgun.
No. Rip to him. Bonnie and Clyde were now alone. Although it was Clyde doing the crimes, because as previously mentioned, Bonnie was kind of along for the ride, with her leg injury meaning that she was pretty useless. She couldn't even be a getaway driver because she couldn't work the pedals. Like, it's just, she was, this is why I think Clyde did like her, because why would he keep her around and take her to places when he didn't have to?
Yeah. Yeah, either that or I'm thinking that she can be his, like, fall guy for something. Like, he could still use her, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. I think he does like her. Clearly, he loves her enough that he's, you know, they're together. Didn't have to bring her along. But, yeah, I do think that that he sees use in her still.
Mm. Clyde then turned his attention to the place he hated most in the world, Eastern Prison. He and Foltz once agreed that one day they would return to the prison, kill all of the guards, and release the prisoners. Despite Foltz not being around anymore, Clyde wanted to complete this and enlisted the help of Floyd Hamilton, the brother of the previous gang member, Raymond Hamilton, who was locked up inside of the prison. Floyd and a man named Jimmy Mullins snuck into the perimeter and left guns and ammo. Now, I know what you're thinking. This prison isn't maximum security with, like, brick walls and all of that like you're imagining. It was barbed wire fences, guards and dogs. If you ram a car into that fence, you're doing damage.
Hmm.
The breakout took place on January 16th, 1934. Raymond was aware of the plan and enlisted some other inmates who wanted to break out. And the plan was a success. Hamilton and a few accomplices broke out and a prison guard was left dead. Colonel Lee Simmons, the general manager of the whole prison system in Texas, was really pissed off. Bonnie and Clyde had made him look silly, so he didn't want them arrested. He wanted them dead. Mm. And this was the beginning of the end for Bonnie and Clyde.
I quite like that the dude running the prison was a colonel. I quite like the idea that either a military man or I would have thought a military man is running a prison rather than a business.
Prisons are businesses nowadays, aren't they? Which again, I think is part of the issue. There's money in incarcerating people.
There's money in incarcerating people, and the more people you get in, the more money you make.
Exactly. Whereas this was a hard labour prison. I didn't find exactly what labour they were doing, but it was hard labour. I imagine, you know, when you see them on films and stuff, chained together, smashing rocks.
Breaking rocks, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if they still do that. Is there a need to be smashing rocks anymore?
I don't know if they do rocks, but it's called, like, their modern slave trade in America, where these prisoners, but I mean, it's kind of not, because I suppose they get paid, right? That's the definition of slavery, is you're not paid. But you know how much stuff in America is made from prison labor?
Oh, really?
Because it's cheaper. Yeah, like, well, I think they say that. One thing I saw was, like, almost all military equipment that needs to be painted is, what do they call it? Hydro dipping. You know, when they got the...
I love watching videos of that.
It's so good. I watched a dude put his head in one the other day. It was quite funny. But apparently, like, a quite a significant amount of American military equipment is hydro-dipped by prisoners.
Man.
So they get paid, but I think they get paid next to fucking nothing, and companies will specifically source their work through the prison system because it's so much cheaper.
Really? Aren't license plates done there as well? Just things that need to be, like, mass-produced.
Yeah. Yeah, just menial shit.
I suppose, I don't know, if you've committed the crime. This is a moral question, isn't it?
Well, the thing is,
have you lost your rights?
No, because you don't. I mean, weirdly, you lose voting rights because you can't vote if you're a prisoner. In the UK, you can't anyway. But, like, you're going to assume that whoever's running the prison, and we're talking about American prisons because in the UK, prisons are run by the government, right? But in the US, you would assume that the company that's running the prison is definitely making multi-million pound deals with these companies, getting the stuff provided, and then they're paying the prison staff that are actually doing the work peanuts.
Yeah. I mean, it's good business, isn't it?
Yeah.
America is capitalism as far as you can push it.
Manifest.
I've been having this is a little aside. I've been having this debate a lot recently. Like, sometimes I think about, oh, living in America would be really cool. I'd really like to. And I think at some point in my life, I would like to for a period of time. But I can't not have 28 days of holiday. I can't not have that. I can't. Do you know what I mean? And, like, if I want to go to the doctor, like, I just want to go. It's things that people bring up time and time again, and yet it genuinely comes into my consideration when I think about moving over there. The vacation days are a big one.
For me, so Jenna and I had sort of discussed, you know, because I don't think we want to move out of the UK at some point, and we were looking at options, and the US was an option. It's not anymore. And there were several things. It was like, vacation days, but schooling, making sure that the schools are safe enough for the kids. And I'm sorry if this is a vast generalization, but it's what the world sees. Your schools are not safe. Education is really expensive. Like, sending your kids off to university is just really fucking expensive in the US, whereas in the UK the government will give you loans to do that. You pay them back, but you don't really see it, because in the 10 or so years that I've been out of uni, I've not seen it. And healthcare. Those were our red flags. And it's like, if you ever want to have children, good luck.
No, I just find it funny. I think there's people on TikTok. I think mainland Europe is different. England, I think, is somewhere in the middle. Whereas in Europe, you get so many more rights. It's crazy. Like, in Germany, if you have to go to a job interview, they'll pay for your travel. I'm a huge believer that your commute to and from wherever you work should be paid. Because I'm not going there because I want to. Like, I'm going there because, you know what I mean? But I couldn't, the work ethic as well, of being like, oh, you're going to stay late and finish this work. No, I'm fucking not. These are my hours. Whatever you need from me within these hours, I'll do. But apart from that, you do not have my attention. Or when you go on vacation, I don't know if it's a generalization, but there's this American woman on TikTok that talks about it all the time, that you're expected to be checking emails and have your work phone and stuff on vacation. I'm like, absolutely not. This is my time.
Yeah. If you want to pay me to be on call, that's fine, but this is my rate.
Yeah. It's crazy. But anyway, I know some companies...
That?
I don't know. But yeah, if you go to mainland Europe, you have even more rights than the UK. But we can't go to Europe anymore because people vote Brexit, so thanks, everyone.
Big up, Deutschland.
Really helped me. I'd love to live in Germany, but I can't. Anyway, where was I? I've gone on a massive rant there. Step in, Frank Hammer, a retired Texas Park Ranger who had a history of being a great investigator and also had no issue with getting his hands dirty. We're getting to the bit that everyone's been waiting for now.
I like the idea that you're assuming that people are sitting there just being like, for fuck's sake, get on with it.
Yeah, we all know what we're here for. The shootout. Hammer had his own squad and his mission was simple. Kill Bonnie and Clyde. A man named Henry Methvin plays a very important part in this story. He was one of the prisoners who broke out alongside Hamilton and joined the Barrow Gang. Unfortunately for Bonnie and Clyde, he was not a very loyal man. Methvin was offered the chance to avoid the death penalty or the charges altogether, depending on what source you go with, if he helped set up a trap for the infamous criminal couple. There are also sources that claim that his dad agreed this term, but either way, it was set up so Methvin would avoid the death penalty at the very least. May 23rd, 1934. Driving a stolen Ford V8, Bonnie and Clyde were on their way back to the Methvin house. Little did they know, an ambush was waiting for them outside. As they pulled up, Frank Hammer and his squad emerged from the surrounding bushes and opened fire on the couple. And when I say they opened fire, they opened fire. It was ridiculous how many shots they let off. One official at the scene later explained that before the car had even stopped, they unleashed fire with automatic rifles and emptied their clips. They then swapped to shotguns and continued to shoot the car. And once the shotguns were out of ammo, they whipped out their pistols and emptied those into the car.
They, you know what they did? They did like Call of Duty, that quick spam of Y or triangle to get the pistol out as soon as you're out of ammo. Bang, pistol.
Around 150 rounds were fired. And if you haven't already, go and search Bonnie and Clyde's death car and you'll see the devastation. There's a stupid amount of bullet holes in it. And as of today, if you actually want to see the real death car, it's currently on display at the Prim Valley Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, though it does occasionally move around. So depending on when you're listening to this, just check where it is before you go and see it.
On the picture that I have found, it has on it the sign saying, yes, this is the original authentic Bonnie and Clyde death car, assuming that there are lots of people that don't have the original and put it out as such.
It's absolutely mental. But that car has so many holes in it. It's wild. And really interestingly, after they realised that they had killed the couple, obviously, they dragged the car back into the town with their bodies still in it so everyone could see them.
Holy shit. I'm just looking on Reddit, because Reddit's amazing, at the weapons and ammunition found in Bonnie and Clyde Barrow's car after their death. They've got, like, Browning machine guns that you'd see in like COD World at War.
They're ready for shootouts.
The shotguns, they've got so many. That's wild. And I can see the bodies in the car. Damn.
Yeah, they're a mess.
Holy shit.
The undertaker who had to embalm the bodies later revealed that it was extremely difficult because they had so many bullet holes in them, the fluid just kept leaking out. Bonnie was hit 26 times, while Clyde was hit 17.
Damn.
What was weird is that the tens of thousands of people lined the streets for Bonnie and Clyde's funeral. They really had inspired those suffering during the Great Depression, despite the fact they were often targeting normal, hard-working people. Before her death, Bonnie, a keen poet, wrote to her mother with a piece of work titled The Trail's End. And it's really creepy that it foreshadows what was about to happen to them. I have no doubts that they were scared, but it seems as if Bonnie and Clyde were more than happy to die together. And if I may, I will now read you that poem that she sent to her mother. It is a bit lengthy, but it is sort of a premonition of what I've just told you.
I feel like this needs some like old school country, you know, music.
You put in whatever you find.
Like, you know, like... like old documentaries are saying, like the American Civil War. I'm like,
yeah. I know exactly what you're on about. You've read the story of Jesse James, of how he lived and died. If you're still in need of something to read, here's the story of Bonnie and Clyde. Now, Bonnie and Clyde are the Barrow Gang. I'm sure you all have read how they rob and steal, and those who squeal are usually found dying or dead. There's lots of untruths to these write-ups. They're not as ruthless as that. Their nature is raw, they hate all the law, they stall pigeons, spotters and rats. They call them cold-blood killers, they say they are heartless and mean, but I say this with pride that I once knew Clyde, who was honest and upright and clean. But the law fooled around, kept taking him down and locking him up in a cell, till he said to me, I'll never be free, so I'll meet a few of them in hell. The road was dimly lighted, but there was no highway signs to guide, but they made up their minds, if all roads were blind, they wouldn't give up till they died. The road gets dimmer and dimmer, sometimes you can hardly see, but it's fight man to man, and do all you can, for they know they can never be free. From heartbreak some people have suffered, from weariness some people have died, but take it all in, our troubles are small, till we get like Bonnie and Clyde. If a policeman is killed in Dallas, and they have no clue or guide, if they can't find a fiend, they'd swipe their slate clean and hang it on Bonnie and Clyde. There's two crimes committed in America, not accredited to the Barrow mob. They had no hand in the kidnap demand, nor the Kansas City depot job. A newsboy once said to his buddy, I wish old Clyde would get jumped. In these awful hard times, we'd make a few dimes if five or six cops would get bumped. The police haven't got the report yet, but Clyde called me up today. He said, "Don't start any fights. We aren't working nights. We're joining the NRA." From Irving to West Dallas Viaduct, it's known as the Great Divide, where the women are kin and the men are men, and they won't stall on Bonnie and Clyde. If they try to act like citizens and rent them a nice little flat, about the third night, they're invited to fight by a subgun's rat-tat-tat. But they don't think they're too smart or desperate. They know that the law always wins. They've been shot at before, but they do not ignore that death is the wages of sin. Someday they'll go down together, they'll bury them side by side. To few it'll grief, to the law a relief, but it's death for Bonnie and Clyde. That's the poem she sent to her mother before her death.
Hmm. She's just living her fantasy, isn't she?
Literally, she knew that she was going to die, and she was more than happy to die next to Clyde. But she also wanted to address that they'd been wrongly accused of things, which at that point, I don't really see what the issue is. You're going to die regardless.
Yeah, I mean, as well, like, that when you're that, well, when you're that notorious as criminals, you don't start getting uppity about people pinning stuff on you. But, sorry, I didn't do that one. Thank you very much.
Yeah. It's a shame, though, because I thought that's quite a nice poem. I think she's got quite a good way with words. What could have been?
This is the thing. So far as I'm aware, like, she had an all right upbringing. She was fairly, like, you know, they say she's fairly well educated. Yeah.
She just had a hebristophilia.
Yeah, got in with the wrong guy.
Yeah. And that is the end of Bonnie and Clyde. Which is weird that it's now, like, really famous, like, stage shows and films and stuff that sort of show them as heroes, because they were anything but heroes.
Yeah, yeah, no, it is still that Robin Hood sort of aspect to them, isn't there, still in movies and pop culture. I still think that it's more Joker and Harley Quinn.
It definitely sounds like that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, yeah, I don't think this is a relationship that people should be pining for or aspiring to.
Yeah, there we go. I hope everyone enjoyed the story of Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, wild. Well, there you go. Would you ever, if you had a girl who was like, oh, I really want to rob a bank, or actually, like, no, it's, let's not, because you've got to then go in with it. What if you have a girl who says to you, basically, right, James, Tuesday, I am robbing a bank. Here's the plan. It's all going ahead. Like, this is happening. There are guns involved. We don't intend on killing anyone, but there are guns involved for intimidation purposes, of course, and it will help. I want you to be involved in some form or out. Are you going to do it?
No, but I wouldn't snitch.
Interesting. You keep it to yourself. Would you stay with her?
If she succeeds, no, I don't think so.
You think that would be it for you? Be like, right. I'd be terrified. I wouldn't know what to do, because I would be like, I can't get involved in this. Also, we're not going to be together after today. But I'd be terrified, because you know she's got guns.
Yeah, but I'd be like, you know what? I think we're going down different paths. I'm not going to snitch on you. Like, God, good luck with it all. I hope it goes well for you. But I'm not going to be here.
No, I appreciate that. My mum has a really funny story that maybe one day I'll get to tell it in full. But so far as I remember it being told, my mum had this boyfriend when she was like a teenager. She's like 17 or something. And he was really cool, really, like, you know, slick back hair. My nan quite liked him. He seemed like a really decent bloke. He was a few years older. He used to pull up on his like motorbike or something like that, and she'd get on the back of the bike and they'd disappear and they'd go to the pub. And there's this particular pub that they go to, and apparently he'd sit her down at the bar, pay for drinks and money and all this sort of stuff, and then he'd say, well, listen, Di, if I'm not back in 40 minutes, go home. And she's like, okay, fine, whatever. And he always came back. But they'd do this all the time. Same pub, if I'm not back in 40 minutes, go home. And then,
what's he up to?
Yeah, exactly, what's he up to? And then apparently, one day they go to the pub, if I'm not back in an hour and a half, go home. And he doesn't come back. So she goes home. And then they find out in the newspaper or something, he's been robbing the bank.
No way.
And I don't think it went down well because he didn't come back.
That's so funny.
I'll try and find it, and I'll get my mum to sort of tell it in person. But yeah, my mum dated a bank robber very briefly.
But at least he like didn't want to bring her into that world.
I think I'm assuming he quite liked her, right? As far as I remember, he had a wife and kids.
Oh, naughty.
So yeah, he's probably he's not an upstanding citizen who like really cares about people that much. But I think what was happening is that he was in some way using my mum as the alibi to say, well, I was at the pub.
Right, okay.
But I don't know. But yeah, apparently he's a bank robber.
That's so
funny. Or a
thief also, like,
of sort.
How awkward for your mum just sat there by herself. I'm assuming it was the days before everyone had phones as well. So she just sat there.
Yeah, drinks were paid. Just sit at the bar, have a chinwag with whoever's there.
That's so interesting. That's really funny, though. He must have been, if he succeeded a few times, he must have had money.
I don't think he was bank robbing all the time. I think what was happening is he was meeting with his mates to discuss the bank robbery. That's what he was doing when he kept disappearing and coming back every now and then.
Right, but then when they actually tried to do it, it went wrong.
Yeah.
Bank robbing's hard. I mean, I've never tried it, but it just looks hard.
I think it was a lot easier back then, wasn't it? Because, you know, you can throw up a shotgun and just walk in. What are you going to do?
With cameras everywhere nowadays.
I think
but
as
I always
well.
Said if I'm ever homeless and like got nothing going on, no prospects, I'd always try to rob a bank because you're going to win either way. You're either going to succeed and get a lot of money, or you're going to go to prison, get a nice roof over your head, meals paid for.
I don't think it's possible to do it at all anymore.
What, rob a bank?
Not in the old fashion. Like, you can't walk in with a shotgun and go, give me your money.
No. They probably don't have as much cash on site.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a homeless person comes up to me and asks for a 50p. I've not got it. Like, I don't carry any cash on me at all. So banks definitely don't have that much cash. The banks don't have vaults like they once did.
No. Maybe a casino. Maybe that would be the thing to do.
Casino's probably a smarter option.
A lot of cash flows at casinos.
Yeah. But they got tight security with them cameras.
Their security is probably better than a bank.
Probably. Yeah. Because they want to make that money. The house always wins.
Yeah. They do. Unless it's me playing blackjack, in which case I win, because I'm really good at it.
There is no such thing. No one can be good at any gambling sport.
I'm really good at blackjack. There's tactics to it.
No, there's not.
In blackjack, 100% there is. There's
How is that? It's just whatever the dealer picks out.
Yeah, but one, you can count cards, which I'm not clever enough for, and isn't actually illegal. They can ask you to leave, but they can't arrest you. It's not illegal to count cards.
But how can you count a card if you don't know what the deck looks like?
That's the thing, you keep playing until you get familiar with the deck. I don't really know. You'll have to listen to people who are actually good at it. I don't know. There's loads of YouTube videos on it. But there's things like, if the dealer draws a six, they're going to have to pick up at least twice. So the chances are they're going to go bust. So you can stick on a lower number.
Okay.
There's things like that.
All right. Okay. When we do a US tour and we go to Vegas...
If I go to Vegas, I'm either coming away rich or coming away with only the clothes on my back.
And married.
that trip could be a disaster. I think I'd take one bank card with me that's a designated Vegas bank card and leave everything else at home.
Yeah, I'd ask for my year salary in advance.
Yeah, just immediately, straight in, all on black.
Oh, wow. Can you imagine the balls to do that? I mean, the blackjack dealer's probably seen it all before, but, you know... Well, it's not blackjack. What's that? It's craps, isn't it?
Roulette.
What is craps? Yeah. Oh, it doesn't matter.
Craps isn't the card game, I think. No, that's the one where you throw the dice. I don't fucking know. I only play blackjack and sometimes poker.
As we can tell, I'm not a gambler. I don't gamble. I don't know how to play any of them. I've been to a casino a couple of times, and I don't know how to play anything. I just... Which is quite naive of me. I remember when I first went, I remember saying to the dealer at the blackjack, I was like, I don't know how to play this. How do I do it? And he was like,
just copy people next to you.
I'm gonna make loads of money here, he was thinking.
Yeah, easy.
I love that. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. If you enjoyed that, let us know. Rate, review the podcast, send us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. You can 5-star people on Spotify. I forgot that's a thing, so drop us 5 stars on Spotify. That'd be really helpful. Listen, we've been going at this nearly 5 years, and this only works because you guys listen to us. So you can support the show in many, many different ways. You can purchase the merch, maybe pick up a shirt as we're coming into the hot season. You might want to get out the hoodie and throw on a t-shirt. You can always subscribe to us on Patreon, or you could do something as simple as review us. So just drop in a little review, say, these guys are really, really funny. Or you could even say, these guys waste too much time, 10 minutes at the beginning talking before they even get into the episode. I don't care. Just review us, because it works. And drop us 5 stars. That'd be really helpful. Tell your nan, tell your dad, and get people listening. Let's grow. Let's keep going. And yeah, we'll see you on the next one.
Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.